A lot better. Yeah, now that I got some. Give me antibiotics.
Medication.
I got two good nights of drugs. That's what I need. That always makes you feel better.
Okay. I'd like to call this Transportation Committee meeting to order at 1:10. Can the committee secretary call the roll, please?
Representative Cowdy? Representative Kukich?
Here.
Representative Hudson? Representative Sanders?
Here.
Representative Elton?
Here.
Representative Massett?
Here.
And Chairman Williams?
Thank you. I'd like to just say our chairman had some personal problems that he had to attend to, but today we're just going to have an overview from the Transportation Department, and basically that would be it for our agenda for today. And with that, I'll just call forward Commissioner Perkins for testimony to the Transportation Committee here, and let him take over, and if there's questions, we can have the committee members ask. Okay. Welcome, Commissioner Perkins.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Members of the House Transportation Commission, I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to come here and talk to you today. What I'd like to do first is to introduce the people that are with me here today. First, I'll introduce myself. I think you all know me. I'm Joe Perkins, the Commissioner of Transportation. I have with me today Kurt Parkin, Deputy Commissioner, Nancy Slagle, who is the Chief of our Administrative Services, Tom Brigham, who's our Chief of Planning, and in the back is Sam Quito, who is a Special Assistant in DOT, and I think Gary Hayden from the Marine Highway, Director of the Marine Highway System, is also there. I got everybody, I think, didn't I? We've given you, for your information, a little booklet called FY98 Overview for Department of Transportation. My briefing will really not be along the lines of this booklet. It's really for your information. However, I might refer to a chart or two in here, draw your attention to it. But other than that, this is just some information, and if you desire additional information, further explanation of anything that's in this booklet, please ask us, and we'd be very happy to get it to the committee real quickly. I'd like to start my discussion really with talking a little bit about some items that I have talked to both the House and Senate Finance Committees, and I think it's very important to discuss these and at least give you some idea of what we have got done in the last year. So I'd like to, as a first part of my presentation, talk about some of the items that DOT has accomplished in the last year. One thing we did that I'm very, very proud of is for the first time we have chip sealed over 78 miles of National Highway System highways. We've done a little bit before, but we've never done anything of this scale. This chip seal that we've put on our National Highway Systems has extended the life of the pavements by probably 3 to 6 years. This allows us, rather than spending our precious federal money in rehabilitation of pavements and reconstruction of pavements, to put the money somewhere else and use this chip seals that we put down as the interim fix to extend the pavement life. I might mention that we did this for the first time using federal funds. The feds allowed us to go ahead and use ICE-T monies to do only surface repair, and we call this surface repair and we went ahead and accomplished the work. So at 78 miles of chip seal, which is a considerable amount of pavement. We plan to do the same thing next year. One thing we did do with this, which is also very important to me, is that the majority of this was done by DOT in-house forces. And so this helped us out a little bit in funding those people for the summer with federal funds rather than having GF funds. The alternative would probably have been to lay off most of them or not hire back in the case of temporaries. Also using federal funds, we paved 32 miles of existing gravel roads. This is in accordance with our policy of converting gravel roads to paved roads to reduce maintenance costs. It costs us considerably less to maintain a paved surface than it does to maintain a gravel surface. So we are in the process of paving whatever we can pave to again help us with the maintenance costs, which I'll discuss a little bit later in my presentation. One fact that I don't like from the maintenance side but is absolutely necessary, and it happened, we added 50 new lane miles of highway to our system. So we will be maintaining 50 more lane miles this year than we did last year. We completed 5 miles of new road linking the city of Kasan with the Prince of Wales Island Highway System. I think this is a very important transportation link. It allowed the city of Kasan's public school to reopen. People moved back to Kasan because they could go to, their kids could now go to school there, and they had access to Thorn Bay. And this new road is going to greatly assist in the economic growth of that area. I'm really proud of that road, and I think it's the type of facilities that we need to be building to give people access to their communities. We initiated construction on 17 miles of new road to access the popular Steeswipe Mountain Recreation System near Fairbanks. That road should be finished this summer. We did start construction last year. We completed the EIS for the Whittier Access Project, and we expect to award the first construction contract on this project in February. We currently have a bid opening, the first bid opening scheduled for February the 5th. We are going to open the bids. We still have not received all of our permits, but we are fairly well sure that they will come through. There's been a lot of work on them, and I don't see much of a problem. The only potential problem is we also, although I hear it is completed, we have not received the right-of-way from the Forest Service. Again, we're hoping all of this will happen within the next 2 weeks, but we will open bids the 5th of February. On that project, we transferred 4 facilities to local governments, 4 of our roads. One is Mill Bay Road in Kodiak. The borough of Kodiak took it over. East 68th Street in Anchorage, and the municipality of Anchorage took it over. Gershmel Horning in Matsu Borough was transferred, and the nice thing about building Kasan Road was we transferred it to the city of Thorn Bay, the maintenance. So we will not be expending maintenance funds on that highway. The other highlight, I think, in our year, or another highlight, was our quick reaction to the extensive flooding in Matsu in the fall of 1996. This effort included the construction of a new bridge across Hunter Creek, which had washed out and had stranded 40 or 50 people on the other side of the creek. Our people went out, got the new bridge in, and we got access for those people very, very quickly. The other area that we did extensive work and probably were responsible for saving our airport and other portions of the town was down in Seward, which had heavy damage from flooding. We had DOT crews down there. We had the Corps of Engineers just about issuing permits on the spot, and we actually diverted a river to keep it from washing out, taking part of our airport and probably completely filling up their harbor. So we've done quite a bit in the area of disaster relief from that flood in 96. We also gave support to the firefighting effort in Matsu Borough, water trucks and things like that, although we did not play a major role in that fire. On the airport side, I'd like to talk a little bit about the accomplishments of Anchorage and Fairbanks International Airports. Both of these airports continue to grow. In FY96, Anchorage International Airport had over 2 million in-plane passengers, while Fairbanks International ran about 375,000 people through their airport. Anchorage International Airport is the number two airport in the United States for international freight landed. That's international freight going through an airport. Fairbanks is number nine in the United States. A statistic which I find really amazing is about 9% of the total Anchorage employment is airport related. Both Fairbanks and Anchorage International Airports are continuing to grow, as I mentioned previously, and we feel that they're economic engines for economic growth throughout the state. The governor's proposed jet fuel tax reduction should also help to increase the airport growth in both Fairbanks and Anchorage, and I hope you will give it due consideration. In the area of rural airports, we have established a ranking system for future airport construction. Alaska region of the FAA is extremely happy with what DOT has come up with to rank airports as to which ones we should do and which ones we should do first. In fact, they like our proposal so well that they've sent it to Washington, D.C. with a recommendation that it be adopted as the national standard for developing the FAA airport program nationwide. In addition to the establishment of this ranking system, we are implementing an improved radio communication procedures at rural airports. This is in response to the National Transportation Safety Board's recommendations. They made a specific recommendation that Alaska was deficient in this, and we think that we have come up with a solution and corrected the problem. I think this is also an accomplishment because this is a rather powerful board and is totally related to safety. Looking at harbors and the harbor responsibility of DOT, I'm sorry to report that we've accomplished very little this year except some emergency work in the harbor program in the state of Alaska. This is primarily due to the funds that are available that were made available for harbor work. We did turn over two facilities to local governments, two harbors. One was the South Cove Harbor in Craig, and the other facility, not a harbor, but a seaplane dock in Craig, was also turned over to the city of Craig. So Craig occupied quite considerable of our time in getting harbors turned over to local governments. The state of Alaska continues to rely on the Corps of Engineers program for harbor facilities and for harbor improvements. This program has been reduced over the years, and I would foresee that there will be further reductions in the program. The state needs to come up with some kind of a harbor program, and support the harbors in this state. A few accomplishments in the marine highway system. I think the biggest is that we initiated construction on the new Ocean Class vessel. And I'm happy to report that you can actually see a vessel now. I saw a picture, and I will be getting it to the members of the committee yesterday, where it even is starting to look like a ship. But we are, I think most importantly, on schedule for a May 1998 delivery of the new ship, and even more important, we are on budget. We spent a lot of time developing our plans for managing this project, and the director of the Marine Highway System, Gary Hayden, has done an outstanding job. The Marine Highway System is also working on a new reservation system. This reservation system should be completed in May. It's going to provide a much quicker response and allow more private travel agencies access for the purpose of making reservations for people on our ferry system. We're really looking forward to getting this new reservation system going, because we think that it's going to increase ridership and be far more accurate than our current system that we're using. The Anchorage Ticket Sales Office is now located in the Alaska Public Lands Information Center on 4th Avenue in Anchorage, right downtown. This is a lot better visibility for all Alaska visitors. There's about 20,000 visitors go through that facility every month in the summer, and we're hoping that this will improve or add to the service and numbers of people that ride the ferries. This will provide one-stop shopping with other agencies, as there's other agencies also in that facilities offering services. The other thing which is going to be a start of an accomplishment is that we're going to take a very hard look at the Alaska Marine Highway System, its organizations, functions, and so on during the effectiveness review, which I'm going to talk about a little bit later, and during the preparation of the Southeast Transportation Plan, which I'll also talk about under the planning side. And actually, to go right into that and talk about some of our planning accomplishments, is we have initiated the Southeast Regional Transportation Plan. This is due for completion in December of 1997. This plan is extremely important in that it will tell us where money should be spent on the transportation system in Southeast Alaska, whether it be on the Marine Highway, whether it be for additional roads, or whether it be for airport improvements. This will be an intermodal plan, which is the way this nation is heading, and which I agree with, that when we plan transportation, we must consider all aspects of transportation, both water, land, and air. We have formed a group of advisors in Southeast, composed of the mayors of all of the affected Southeast communities, are their designees, who are serving as advisory personnel to our people on this study. The thing that we will do on the Southeast Regional Transportation Plan, and the most important aspect of this, is when we finish it, we must implement it. The plan that is currently in use or in effect in Southeast Alaska, which goes back about 6 or 8 years, if we'd have followed that plan, you'd have two fast ferries running between here and Skagway right now. The fallacy of that is no one implemented it. It is our intent to implement these plans once we get them done. The next plan we're going to look at is a regional plan for Prince William Sound. In this plan, we're going to address the thorny problem of access to Cordova. But we will do it in the context of not a specific project, but in the context of how best to provide the transportation required in Prince William Sound. Following that will be a regional plan for Southwest Alaska. And following that plan, which is probably a year and a half to 2 years, we want to do a plan for the YK Delta, which has enormous transportation problems. In addition to kicking off the first of our regional plans, we are also working on Alaska's long-range transportation plans. This is the umbrella under which the regional plans will fit. This has been kicked off. You have probably seen the advertisements in the papers for public comment, public involvement. We want to plan where we're going in the state of Alaska in the next 20 to 25 years with transportation. If I was to describe our planning effort, I think I would say that we have the umbrella plan, which is the Total Alaska Transportation Plan, which our plan that we currently have is basically out of date, completely out of date. And by the way, this is a requirement for us to continue to receive federal funds to have federal approval of this plan. But under the umbrella of that plan, you will have the regional plans. We currently don't have this. We've never had it. The statewide and the regional plans are the responsibility of DOT. Under the regional plans, the local community should do their own planning. And this is happening in Anchorage with AMATS. It's going to be happening more in Fairbanks with FMATS. But we have places in the state that have transportation needs that do not have the resources to take a look and see what they should be asking for or what they should be building and what they should not be building. In this case, recognizing that these problems exist, the DOT is providing assistance, and we're not doing it. We're helping doing it, helping them set it up for the communities to do their local planning. The two cases, the two major communities that we're working in right now, is we are providing assistance to Bethel and Kotzebue, neither of whom have a public works department or the capability of planning. Both of these cities are contributing money toward this planning effort, so it's not something that is entirely funded by the state. The other, I think, significant thing that has happened in planning, after a 2 to 3 year effort, maybe we can say longer than that, the draft environmental impact statement for Juneau Access has been completed. This impact statement has been turned over to the Federal Highway Administration. They will review it, make comments on it, and send it back to us for release to the public. This will kick off the public hearing process and the final decisions as to what will be done with Juneau Access. This was a specific legislative-funded activity funded about 3 or 4 years ago. So we have got now the DOT portion of it, at least the document written. The other thing that we're doing, which is I think an interesting planning operation, is we're currently doing a location study for a road to Rampart. And this would connect Rampart basically to the Elliott Highway. It's not a long road. It has been discussed and rediscussed over the years. We will, in this study, decide if you did put a road in, where would it go? The next step would be if the road could compete within our competitive system, then it would go for EIS or EA or whichever type of environmental document we deemed that was required and could proceed on again if it was of a high enough priority. But we are going to put the location study to bed and at least get the information out for the people to make decisions as to whether or not this road should be ultimately constructed. We had some significant activities in other areas. As we told you last year that we would do, we eliminated 58 positions in our FY97 budget. These were authorized positions. Something I'm extremely proud of is that we're the first state in the United States that's come up with a system to electronically bill the FAA, and we're doing that. And in fact, we are billing, twice weekly now, or we will be? This really helps the state's cash flow with the ability for us to electronically bill this federal agency, which provides us some $65 million worth of funds every year. Another thing that I'm also, I credit Mark Plum with, the manager of the Anchorage Airport, he managed to reduce his custodial service by 50%. And for those of you who have been through the airport, I think it looks better now than it has in many years. And he cut his costs 50%. I'm not sure how he did it. I know he did it through better contracting and better scoping of his contracts. But I think Mark deserves a lot of credit for that, because the Anchorage Airport looks, to me anyway, better than it has in years. A small item, a smaller item, but to give you an idea of some of the things we're looking at, we're now using waterless street sweepers in Anchorage. This eliminates the need to have a water truck with your sweepers. So again, saving money. A technical area that we have implemented is we are using a new type of asphaltic pavement, which is called stone mastic. We've used a considerable amount of it in Anchorage. It looks a lot more open than the regular asphalt pavement, but we have found out that this has certainly reduced wear on the roads by using this type of pavement. It's a little more expensive, but the wearability of it makes it well worth the extra cost. So we are going to that from a technical viewpoint. Most of the sanders that you see flinging sand on the roads are now, in the wintertime, are now equipped with computerized controls to evenly spread the sand. Before, the sand was spread whenever the wheels turned. It was a direct distributor based on speed of the wheels. Now it's computerized control. We can put an even application down, and we have cut the amount of sand that we buy every year statewide considerably using this. We've started testing an anti-icing compound in Petersburg. And basically this compound is something you spray on before the snow comes, and it keeps the snow from accumulating on your highway. Tests so far are very, very good. We may well be applying this statewide, or at least in portions of the state that we think that this is beneficial. I have set up a task force in DOT, a technical task force on snow removal techniques, and we are going to look nationwide on what everybody in the country is doing and try to come up with some ways of saving money in the state of Alaska on this tremendously expensive snow removal operation, particularly expensive in Anchorage to where we have to truck snow. If we can reduce the volume and have to truck a lot less snow, it will be significant savings for us. So I'm going to task this group with coming up with some policies in the state as to how we should be doing things, what products we should be using, rather than letting each individual maintenance group make their own decisions, because I think that that is a very fertile area to cut our costs. We implemented a DOT RIP program. When we got all finished, 97 people were invited to take advantage of the RIP. I have no idea how many of those 97 will actually take the RIP. An interesting thing happened in DOT to be able to be eligible for a RIP. We must be able to show a cost savings. The federal government will not participate in any RIP costs, so anybody in DOT that's federally funded is not eligible for a RIP. So these are basically general funded positions, and again, I do not know how many will take it. I think the average is, what, about 28% or something like that, a historical average. So if that held true, we'd maybe have 25 people take the RIP. The savings on this RIP would be about $600,000 over 3 years, or about $200,000 a year if everybody took it. And again, I doubt if everybody will take it, so we will certainly not achieve any $200,000 a year savings this year. I've gone through just a few of the things that DOT has done this last year, but I think the biggest point that in all cases, these significant achievements have involved state workers providing a service to the people of Alaska. And that's the job of DOT, is providing a service. We do have problems, and we do have big problems, and we have problems that need to be solved. The biggest problem I see is unfunded essential maintenance and operation work, which is not being performed on our roads, airports, harbors, and facilities. Now, when I said that, I'm trying to keep from saying deferred maintenance, because I don't think that's a very good word. So maybe we can call it essential, unfunded essential maintenance and operation work. That's what it is deferred maintenance. I was extremely happy to hear the speaker say that she's going to appoint a legislative task force to review this problem. I'm sure the Transportation Committee is going to play some kind of a role in this, and I will guarantee you, you have my absolute full support for any effort that will help us to reduce our deferred or essential unfunded maintenance. Roads are a major problem. Although we used federal funds to do the surface repairs that I mentioned, and we used them last summer, and I'm going to use some more this next summer, these funds can't be used for such things as guardrail repair, signs, striping, culvert repair, brushing, and things like this that really the people that drive the roads don't notice too much. We must start programs to correct these deficiencies, because they are going to hurt us in the long run. And such a little item as the visibility of our signs is important, because they're there for safety. They're there for warning, and they're there for a purpose. And throughout the state, our signs are in terrible condition. We have not got the effort in signage, brushing, and striping. Most of the striping we're doing is now we're on a two-year basis. So you've basically got your roads that are fairly well unstriped. So we do need to do something about this. Since statehood, the federal government has put into Alaska $4.7 billion in direct grants to the state to construct roads. That's a big number, bigger than I thought it was. The feds right now are concerned about the level of maintenance that we're performing on our roads, because in accepting that money, we agree that we will perform an acceptable level of maintenance. The Federal Highway Administration has communicated their concerns to me about the maintenance problems in this state in a recent letter, which I will provide to each of you at the end of this briefing. I'm concerned about the timing of this letter from the feds at a time when ICE-T is going to be reauthorized and our formula is going to be reauthorized, that we receive a letter questioning our maintenance practices in the state. Rural airport staffing and operations is also a major problem. The federal FAA has provided us over $875 million since statehood to build airports. The majority, with the exception of perhaps a few improvements at Anchorage International and a few other, but the majority of every airport that you land on has been built with federal money. They are also, the FAA, are also concerned about our ability to operate these airports safely. And they have written me two letters over the last year stating that our airport operations are bordering on being unsatisfactory. We'll provide you copies of these two letters. I take the FAA letters very seriously because we must run safe operation, particularly at our rural airports. After we got these letters, we reviewed all of our airport operations, our rural airport operations, particularly for the certified airports, because they're the ones that have the most significant amount of rules by the FAA for operation. We found deficiencies that must be corrected. In consideration of the seriousness of this entire problem and the threat to life safety, we have in our proposed budget this year transferred approximately $800,000 from road maintenance and facilities maintenance into airport operations and maintenance internally. I am very aware that this will even further compound our road and facility maintenance problems. But in my opinion, it's absolutely necessary, and we must run these airports in a safe manner or we're going to get them closed down. We have reached a financial state in DOT where the existing organization within DOT, in my opinion, is becoming quickly very non-efficient. Therefore, I have started an effectiveness review of the entire organization, from the commissioner's office to the construction inspector to the snowplow operator and all levels in between. The purpose of this review is not to cut the budget, but to realign the department to provide an increasing level of service. As an example, we will take savings from administrative changes and apply them to increased service levels. This review that we're going to do is also going to include, for probably the first time in DOT, a review of the capital improvement program that is federally funded. Any savings that we can come up with in the federally funded CIP program through realignment or whatever will mean more asphalt, more concrete, and more work that goes into new construction. We will be reviewing the entire management structure of the DOT, which has not been done probably since the inception of DOT in an extensive manner. The initial review will be completed in early May, and I plan to implement it in July of this year. Certain technical portions of the review may well continue into the fall. Our proposed budget, as we submitted it, contained a $100,000 reduction which we will save from this review. We will save more than $100,000, but I want all above $100,000 applied to increasing services that we're providing to the public. The governor recently signed an executive order transferring the Division of Weights and Measures from the Department of Commerce to DOT, enforcement of these regulations from public safety to DOT. All commissioners agree that this is the thing to do. We have talked to many people, including the trucking community and labor unions, and we have found no one in disagreement. This change will provide one-stop shopping for permits. As it currently stands, there are three agencies involved. It makes sense for this organization to be in DOT because the purpose of weights and measures and the regulations that we put on our commercial truckers and various other industries are there to protect our roads. In addition to that, we are required by the federal government, by the Federal Highway Administration, to do these activities. We have been bordering on being unsatisfactory. The federal government can, if we become unsatisfactory, cut off federal funds for the highway program. So therefore, now we will have this organization in DOT, and we will be able to control and ensure that we don't ever reach a point that the federal government would even consider cutting our highway funds because of non-activity on this by this group. I think it's a good idea. I think it's the right thing to do, and I hope you all will support it. I'd like to talk a little bit about the status of our federal funds. I've mentioned some big numbers that the feds have put in highways and that the feds have put in aviation, but I think we need to look at what we're getting right now and then what is our forecast or our prediction as to where it will go in the future. Right now, the federal aviation program is about, for this year, about $1.5 billion. The proposal for next year is $1 billion. This would be, if you applied it as a percentage, a reduction of $60 million in next year's program, if it goes through. We get, this year, supposed to get $65 million. So if the $1 million goes through, then that goes to about a 30% reduction, and that's where I get the $20 million. We need to watch this very closely in the Washington level. We're going to be spending a lot of time and have spent a lot of time discussing this with our congressional delegation, but we need to get our program, the aviation program, back up to the million and a half. The thing that concerns me even a little more than that affects this year's program of $65 million. On December 31st of this year, the 10% ticket tax on airplane tickets expired. Congress, it had expired last year also, and Congress extended it for 1 year. To date, Congress has taken no action to reimpose it. Every day that goes by is millions and millions of dollars that are not being put into the Aviation Trust Fund. If Congress does not get this tax reauthorized, this Aviation Trust Fund is going to be probably running out of money in the spring. What the FAA is doing right now is withholding authority for us to spend money basically on discretionary projects. And this is somewhere in the vicinity of $20 million or so. So we could not only need to worry about next year, but we need to push to get this ticket sales tax reinstated so that our program can proceed this year. Because with the FAA, you don't know what you're going to get till they actually give it to you, and they do not give it to you in a lump. They give it to you by project. And there's about four or five different kinds of projects, and the one I'm most concerned is discretionary, which we do quite well in. So that's our problems within the FAA. Again, I think it's something that we need to watch very carefully, and as information becomes available, I will report back to the Transportation Committee and tell you what's going on. Of equal importance, as many of you have heard me talk about, this is the year for the reauthorization of ICE-T. The major concern that we as Alaskans should have in this is to retain what we're getting now. ICE-T provides us $210 to $220 million a year in federal funds for the construction of highways. This is probably going to be the most contentious bill in the United States Congress this year, because it is one of the few legislative actions which distributes directly to the states over $20+ billion. To date, to give you a report, and I have been working on this for the last year, through this, my activities, I know most of the commissioners in the other 49 states. We keep our ear to the ground as to what is happening in those states, who's forming alliances, who isn't. We have joined no alliances. We are sitting actually on the fringe deliberately. And to date, we have not become a specific target of anybody. And this is good. The battle right now is being fought between the northeastern states, New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, against states like California, Virginia, Florida, and Texas. And I didn't understand this until I understood that the last ICE-T that was passed was basically crafted by Senator Moynihan from New York. New York does quite well and would like to stay where they are. California does not do that well, nor does Florida, nor does Texas, nor does Virginia. So that is the battle that's going on right now. There are lots of proposals. There are some very scary proposals being made on the future of ICE-T funding. One proposal, which I do not think will go anywhere this year, but I think is something that we will have to be very watchful of in the future, is a proposal to reduce the federal gas tax by about 3/4 and take the remaining tax and fund construction activities on the national highway system. All other roads would then be the responsibility of the state, and then the state could pass their own gas tax, making up the federal reduction and fund the roads. That would be a disaster for the state of Alaska, although it makes a lot of sense for Florida, Texas, even New York. I think someday that this is going to be a very serious proposal, and this is something I think Alaska is going to have to watch out for a long time. We're monitoring this extremely closely. In fact, I am going to spend next week in Washington, D.C., working with the congressional delegation, working with the Department of Transportation and various others on staying close and doing what I can to keep our funds hopefully at least at the same level that we're getting right now. This is a top priority for me. It is a top priority for the governor, and it is an extremely important program for the state of Alaska. You can count on us to do our best work that we can on this, and we will keep you informed of anything that can be done from the legislative side to assist us. Remember that this is not going to be a Republican-Democratic battle. It is a battle, bare knuckles, state against state, as far as funding is concerned. This pretty well winds up the comments that I wanted to make in general to the committee. Again, I appreciate coming back to this room. This is my third year, and it's pretty familiar, except the pictures need to be put back up. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. I think the- off of the-
cuff, but how much money does DOT spend on planning and program that both federal funds and state funds? Do you have a, is that in here, combined funds?
I'm going to look to Mr. Brigham, my director of statewide planning. Tom, would you like to come up here? I was doing some mental calculations, but you're much better at it than I am.
Madam Chairman, Representative Cowder, if you add together both the what we do here at headquarters in terms of the statewide plan, the regional plans, and those things, the programming efforts, and all the planning that goes on in each of the regional offices, doing the working with the local communities, going out to there, do their public meetings, and pulling the project, local projects together, and so on, along with all the data collection that's required by federal highways, I mean, it kind of goes on and on. It's about $6 million a year.
Six?
Yeah, in that.
Is that both state and federal funds?
Mostly, almost entirely federal funds.
We have almost no state program. It used to be fairly large. It's been cut down to practically nothing.
Yeah, there is, at headquarters, we have virtually no state general funds. In the regions, we do still have some. There's a little bit of state money there, but not much.
If I should continue, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Is there a integrated or multimodal state plan for surface, air, and marine transportation? Do you have a?
Well, we have basically sort of a skeleton plan at the moment, and the work that the commissioner discussed is in attempting to flesh that out and give it, make it a plan that really says something and provides some definition of how we want to address the modes and integrate them. The regional plans really take that right down to the project level. In other words, in Southeast, we're looking at, is it really going to be more cost effective to build a road link, improve the ferries, or improve the airport systems for certain parts of Southeast?
Could we see maybe the skeleton plan or what you have?
You bet.
Yeah,
oh, absolutely.
I appreciate that.
I might draw your attention to page 16 of our handout. This is the GF money that's involved in planning. It's mainly $851,300, and that's at the regional level.
What
that's
page
not
is that?
Page 16. That is not federal funds. This is the state.
Yeah, around 100,000 of that is here in Juneau at headquarters. My being here cannot be charged to a federal program. I need to charge my time today to the state budget, for example. So we have a little bit left there. The remainder, the bulk of that is at the
Do you have do you know how much money, or maybe it's in here too? I apologize for being late today, but I was at another meeting and traffic and everything.
Okay, well, next time we'll make sure that we...
Yeah, I will be here.
You didn't miss out on a whole lot. Commissioner Perkins just started.
I missed out on his comments. That's
yeah, just a little bit of it.
I'd like to know how much percentage is spent on pre-construction versus the construction activities, actual, you know. That would be pre-construction being the planning, the looking at projects, the design, the right-of-way acquisitions, which may not be actual construction. You know, do you have,
by project
breakdown?
Madam Chairman, Representative Calgary,
you might have to.
Yeah, I can give you some general ideas, though, because one of the first things I checked when I came to DOT, being I came from private industry and did the same thing in private industry, was how are charges related. And the first thing you run into, it's very difficult. It's apples and oranges in comparison of how you figure overheads and costs and all of this. But we run somewhere about 25%. In that ballpark on projects.
on.
And this is design, pre-plan, pre-construction planning, this type of activity. And on a small project, sometimes it'll be higher than that. On a large project, a lot of times it's much lower than that. But the average that you'll probably get is about 25% on those, and about 75% of the money goes into construction. And I think one way that you can probably look at this is to take the amount of construction contracts awarded each year versus the amount of money available. And that'll give you some idea of the of how the funds, if I remember correctly, I think we awarded about $180 million in construction contracts last year on this program.
How much do you have a figure on how much DOT does through force accounts versus, you know, through force accounts construction? And, you know, on the maintenance activity as well as the construction projects?
Madam Chairman, Representative Cowder, I can't give you the full picture, but I give you some pieces of it. We spent probably about $2 million of our federal funds last year in force account DOT worker performed surfacing, which I had mentioned. This was chip seals and the work that we did. It's the first time we've ever used federal funds on maintenance like that. And we did use our own people. The alternative to that was to lay those people off. It was a very necessary activity for DOT to maintain the limited staffing that we have. So we sort of supplemented what comes from the general fund with doing some work ourselves. So about $2 million there. The only other force account, and that's on the maintenance side, the only other force account that is done in DOT is that we have the ability, if it's determined to be in the best interest of the state, and this has to be proven to the federal government, FHWA has to approve this. If it's in the best interest of the state and the best interest of the federal government at remote sites, particularly rural communities, we can go into force account operations at those rural communities. Now, the way that the best interest determinations usually work is that we can produce cost savings because we do not have to, in those cases, pay Davis-Bacon wages. And what has happened in most of the rural communities, and particularly the villages, that we have done force account work, is that the wage rates have probably been about 60% of Davis-Bacon. Therefore, we show a project cost savings by the reduced labor cost, in addition to providing employment for the people that are in that village. If you take that percentage,
and you can do that legally using federal funds.
Yes, sir. They have to approve it. Right. I have to do a best interest determination. Each one of these is written up, and there is a determination made, and the calculations are there that it is in the best interest to do this. Now, we look at a lot of things. You know, what's our capability of managing, and things like this. And to date, it's been, in my opinion, fairly successful. It is very limited, and I think that there is probably more people in the civilian community that thinks it's rather extensive. And what we would like to do, or what I would do for you, would be to provide you the statistics of what we've done over the last 3 years that has been force account and where it was done. I think you'll find that it's a very small percent, and maybe we can get everybody on board, and people will either like it or they won't like it, but we'll be using factual data.
One more, another area you touched on it when I first went in about the Marine Highway System and the policy and And what is the policy on privatization? You know, that's been, that seems to have came forward here. Just as a comment on my part, maybe some of the our ferries are out of compliance with Fed regs. It might cost considerable to bring them into compliance, and I just like what your plan is for the long-term future, if you could, of the privatization issue.
Okay. Madam Chairman, Representative Cowdery, I'm going to address the first part of that, and then I'm going to let Gary Hayden come up here, and Marine Highway Director, and let him address privatization. Let me talk a little bit about the capital program and the ferry system. I think this is something that people have forgotten about a little bit in the total cost of the ferry system. The capital program for the ferry system, the entire capital program, is funded by federal highways. Otherwise, it's DOT controlled. The new vessel, which is going to cost us $80 million, of which $15 million is state money, is paid for in the feds. We're paying $50 million this year out of our program for the new ferry. That's one reason our program is less in some areas this year, is because we are making a major investment in our ferry. Next year, if I remember the numbers right, it's right at $20 million, and that's the final payment on, or it's a little less than 20, whatever it is. That's the final payment on the ferries. But every capital project done on the ferries is funded by the Marine Highways. And when we do our comparison, people forget to add that in. And again, this is DOT monies that are going into the ferry system. Now, as far as having the ferries upgraded, I'll give you a brief brief discussion here, and if you have more questions, Gary can go into more detail. But we have to meet, or have had to meet, what we call SOLAS requirements, which is safety of the sea, is that life and safety at sea, which are international requirements. Now, the reason we got to meet international requirements is we go to Prince Rupert. And ultimately, these international requirements become Coast Guard requirements, and we have to do them anyway, or some of them. These requirements are such things as covered lifeboats. We've into a major program to get shells on our lifeboats. We have used federal highway money to do all those SOLAS requirements, and we have them programmed. We've done a heck of a lot of them already, but we have them programmed for every vessel with the exception of the Malaspina. The Malaspina has not had SOLAS work done on it. Some of the other work that falls in the SOLAS category is after they had the ferry turn over in, where was it, Czechoslovakia or Bulgaria or wherever it was, that killed the 400 people. What happened in that is water got in on the deck, got to bouncing around and flipped it. Well, they want all of our doors watertight. So we're having to put all of the entrance doors, redo those watertight, and then we probably should anyway. But we've got that all done with the exception of the Malaspina, because the new ferry was basically, was anticipated several years ago to be a replacement for the Malaspina. So we hadn't done it. Although the Malaspina, don't get me wrong, it is not unsafe. It is a safe vessel. But we have not done the things required for us to serve Prince Rupert after this year. This is the last year we can serve Prince Rupert with Malaspina. So the state of the fleet is in good repair. And we are up to snuff on seven of our vessels with all the international SOLAS requirements. Now, in the Operation Prairie Ferry System and privatization, I'll let Gary discuss our limitations of privatization.
Thank you, Commissioner. Madam Chairman, Representative Calvert. There's a state law in the state statute that prohibits the Alaska Marine Highway System from competing against private carriers. So we're not competing and prohibiting competition at all. where a private carrier wants to enter the market. We have encouraged them to do their own analysis and to enter that market at their own risk. There are, I believe, during the last legislative session, there were two proposals that the legislature was briefed on that were discussed in the terms of privatization. One of those was not a private ferry, the other one was a private ferry. Let me talk about both of those just real briefly. The citizens on Prince of Wales Island are talking about forming a port authority, and the port authority under state law would allow them to take on the transportation powers. They have yet to make that call. If they want to do that, we've encouraged them to go do that. I believe that the people who are receiving the service should make the decision as to what level of service that they desire. They have asked the state to fund part of that program. Yeah, Senator Stevens has gotten them a special appropriation, and they're in the STIP to, I believe, maybe run part of that federal appropriation through Department of Transportation Public Facilities. If that project comes to fruition, that's to the advantage of the Marina Highway System, because we currently provide a higher subsidy on that link than we do on the average for the whole fleet. The subsidy for the whole fleet, as far as state general funds, is 40%, and we generate 60% of our revenues covers the cost. On that particular run, we subsidize at 70% and generate 30% of revenue. So it's to our advantage, to the state's advantage, to the whole region's advantage, to have that project come to fruition. When it will happen, if the people decide to vote, if they go do their bond issue, they secure the rest of the funding to build a new ship and come to operation, maybe the year 2000, 2001, there may be a public ferry, but it would be very similar to a community road system where the locals are providing the funding and doing support. The second one is there has been discussions and briefing in the legislature, I believe, last year by Gold Belt talking about their looking at North Lynn Canal and running a ferry there. We have had conversations with them, I believe, when was the last time?
About a month ago.
They were in the office, and they were briefing us as to where they were in their project. Their ferry service is linked to development of their real estate at the end of the highway here in Juneau, which is also linked with the development of gold mines and providing support services there. We left that meeting and asked if there was anything else that we could do, and they said no. I deliberately asked, have we cooperated with you fully? How would you respond if you were asked that question? They said, we've been very cooperative and we appreciate the help. So we've shared data with them, and in their case, I believe it's a matter they've got to make an economic decision. It's a significant investment of order of $30 million to build a vessel that they were talking about. Whether that will happen, I don't know. I guess they're the people to ask about that. We've had the discussion with them. And the challenge for North Lynn Canal is, how do you have the private sector enter that market and in such a manner so that the revenues to the Marine Highway System are not taken away to the point that we have to cut back on service to the rest of Southeast? And I'm going to brief the committee on Friday, I believe it is, the Marine Highway System, and I'll give you more background so that you'll understand the answer. But we're having those discussions.
Talk about privatization of service.
Okay, that's a good point. Were you discussing particularly the food service privatization issue?
Well, I was really in mind of privatization of the Marine Highway System.
Oh, the whole thing?
Has that been discussed or any idea of that?
Let me take a shot at that. I would love to discuss that with anybody that will discuss it. The problem is most ferry systems are identical to ours. Washington State Ferry System runs on 60% revenue, 40% from the state. We run on the same percentage. The one in San Francisco runs the same way. I don't think that there's any ferry system that I know of that makes money. And what this does is this pretty well precludes the private operator from taking over and running a whole system. And what Gary was mentioning, there are certain routes, and this is of concern to me, that are high volume, high dollar routes that private industry is looking at, not the Prince of Wales one, but the Skagway Juneau is a high volume, fairly, it's a good revenue route for us. And if it gets to the stage that private industry picks off all those good ones and we're left with all the losers, then we're really going to be in trouble on the thing.
But I don't think that. I don't understand what's wrong with that. From the private sector, if they want to come in and provide a service that you maybe can't, you know, you can phone up in the middle of the summer and try to get reservations. It's a waste of time of even...
No, I agree with it. I agree with them coming in.
My point is, what's wrong with? Nothing against DOT, but I think we're doing about all we can with the system as it is now. And maybe somebody's got new ideas that they can make money and provide the full service. That's what I would. I didn't know if you had did was.
We have never had anybody offer us any thing like's happening with the railroad to where they've got to prepare. I would dearly love to have a prospective buyer come and talk to us.
But maybe, you know, like I had an old worn out cat. Everybody, it's a cat, but nobody wanted to buy it. They wanted to come in and do the business with their cat. So that's what I'm saying. There may be a time in the future when the funds will have to be diminished, and hoping the private, especially if the private sector provides a service.
Representative Cowdery, the issue is not the asset, the vessel. The issue from the private sector is being able to run and on an annual basis, the traffic volume varies like 7-1 between peak season and the lows and periods during January. And that the low periods, when the traffic is low, requires the state subsidy. So from the private sector, yes, they could come in and buy a whole new fleet of vessels and run, but their problem is they would not have a high enough revenue base during the winter time to support their operations. I talked to barge companies, and they decrease and have fewer barges out running and are looking at ways of trimming their costs during that low volume period, just like what we are. And the problem is having the volume on an annual basis to support the operation. That's why the state's having to subsidize it. So I think that's why we haven't seen private sector people come in. There has been one of the Princess lines several years ago ran a ro-ro vessel out of Vancouver ferry in southeast, and they ran it for 1 year and lost money on it and took the vessel and put it somewhere else in the world. So the opportunity is there if people were interested, you know, coming forward.
We'll discuss this in great detail on Friday. I think we've got 2 hours.
And I apologize to the chairman taking up so much of your time, I'm very interested in these. These areas and the questions that I asked, if you could give it to the committee in writing that you was unsure of, and whatever, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll do that. No problem.
Thank you, Chairman.
Is that all, Representative Cowdery?
Well, I got you.
Okay.
We'll wait for Friday. Okay?
Friday will be the overview on the Marine Highway. Yeah. So at that time, any questions that you haven't been able to get across, you have opportunity to do that. Okay. Representative Elton, did you have some question or comment?
A couple of questions.
Okay.
Perhaps we can expand the discussion of privatization of the Marine Highway system and talk about toll roads also, which are a continual cost to the state. Did I misunderstand, Commissioner, but at one point you were saying that you were transferring money out of maintenance in operations to rural airports, and did you mention a figure?
$800,000.
And maybe I'm making a connection I shouldn't make, but later on you referred to the letter that was then distributed about the declining level of maintenance on Alaska's highways. So essentially what you're saying is you think that the rural airport problem is strong enough to further jeopardize what the feds are saying here.
Yes, sir, I do.
I guess a comment, Madam Chair, is that, maybe what we're talking about is not new ways of dividing up the pie. Maybe what we're talking about is we need to make the pie bigger. I mean, essentially what we're doing, and I have a fear, Commissioner, I think I've mentioned it to you in the past, I have a fear when you talk about rearranging admin money, that what you're doing is you're taking money out of one pocket and making that pocket poorer, putting it in another to maintain at a crises level something else, and creating a future crises because you've moved money from one pot to the other. And I think that is especially alarming when we have a letter like this. And I don't mean to sound like I'm harping on this, because I don't think this is your fault, but I think it's a concern. And then the second and final thing, Madam Chair, I had a whole bunch, but I have another meeting at 2:30, so you're lucky that I've scratched some things off. I think I may have mentioned this to you before also, Commissioner, but I guess I'm a little bit concerned. You know, my original impression is the Southeast Transportation Study was going to be done in Maine, and now you're mentioning it's not going to be done until December. I'm somewhat concerned, I guess, that you talk about having a Southeast plan in December when you have to make up your mind this summer on what you do for the Malaspina, with the Malaspina, for example. I'm somewhat concerned that you're not going to have a Southeast transportation plan in place prior to that point in time when you go to the public on hearings with the general access study. It seems, why are we having a plan that is going to come in too late for you to make a decision on the Malaspina, and too late for you to make a decision, you know, or fully inform the public in the public hearing phase on the general access study?
I guess, you know, in an ideal world, you know, we'd be sort of finishing up the Southeast plan now, and it would be in a better position to inform those decisions, but I think we're going to be looking, or the Southeast plan will look at significant enough alternatives in terms of the way the marine highway system operates and potential road links and so on, and enough of those are going to be not today's issues or tomorrow's issues, but something that we'll be addressing between now and 5 years from now. I mean, any road link, for example, is going to take, be it Juneau Access or, say, Baranof Warm Springs or any of those, is going to take a significant amount of time to actually, you know, build and put in place. Our effort in terms of Juneau Access, for example, is simply to be on track and work in parallel with that effort. So we're, you know, what we're saying out of the region on Juneau Access and what we're saying out of headquarters on the Southeast plan is essentially the same message. If we're about, you know, if the Juneau Access EIS process works along, and, you know, meanwhile the Southeast plan is working along, frankly, I don't see a problem, because we can wait on Juneau Access a couple of months if it's going to take us that long to get the Southeast plan to the point where we can, you know, where we can parallel those efforts. I really don't think that's going to be a problem.
Madam Chair, if I could follow up.
Representative Elton, I believe that the commissioner will be available on Friday as well. Is that possible?
If I could just quickly follow up.
Yes.
I mean, what about the decision on the Malaspina? Are you going to postpone a decision on the Malaspina until the southeast plan is done? And then I guess the last question is it being postponed from May till December because of problems with the contractor?
No, we'd intended. I will say, quite frankly, it did take us longer to negotiate the contract and get it going than we thought it would. But no, we don't have any problems of any significance really with the contractor.
Perhaps they can answer the question on the decision on the Malaspina Friday.
I would like to go ahead and answer that today.
Okay.
Is we will make that decision within the next couple of months. I realize that a decision to sell the Malaspina could not be recouped in the plan, but if the decision is to use it as a day boat, then it will be recouped. I mean, you know, we haven't done anything that's irreparable. And we should make that decision early March.
Thanks, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Elton, Representative Kukesh, did you have any comments or questions?
I had four items, but I don't even need an answer today, but I'd like to bring them up for your consideration.
Okay.
Madam Chairman, thank you.
Yes.
First of all, I know you never talked about the letters you gave us this afternoon. I'm hoping on Friday you're going to talk to us about them, because I'm really concerned specifically about the first one from Robert Ruby on the maintenance and deferred maintenance, and I really would like to hear from you on Friday on how you plan to address that. Secondly, on the privatization, I think there's other areas of privatization that you haven't gotten into that I'd like to hear whether you're thinking about them or not. And one of them, for example, on the ferry system is the meal system. I mean, I'm sure you could think of a privatization on the meals, have somebody do it on a contract basis, and maybe that may come out to a savings for the marine highway system. And that's just one part of it. I mean, you have laundry, you have oil deliveries to the marine highway system. Some of those may be able to be done cheaper and better by a private contractor. Thirdly, I really would like to hear from you on I keep hearing the new ferry is going to be ocean going, and I know we're not going to have a plan for Southeast Alaska until December of 1997, and I want to know whether that ocean going includes taking it out of Southeast Alaska. And I really think it's unfair to people like us who are in Southeast Alaska to not tell us whether that's part of the plan or not, even though the plan's not done. The last thing, Mr. Commissioner, is that I really think that it's really not fair to the people of Alaska and Southeast Alaska to have these plans not available to us for years and years from now. I mean, I see, for example, a YK plan being 3 or 4 years down the road, and the Southeast plan being done in December of 1997, it seems to me that there are parts of the transportation plan that are going to be obsolete by the time you get to the last plan. And I'm a little uncomfortable with that. I'm not criticizing, I'm just saying that how do you make all of those things jive into the same pot by the time 4 years down the road one plan is finally getting done when the other ones may be obsolete by then. And I really am uncomfortable with having an overall state plan with these regional plans underneath when they're going to take so long. And that's either just comments. And you don't have to answer them today. I'd just like you to consider them and maybe on Friday
talk about them.
Sure.
Madam Chairman, I'd like to make one comment.
Yes, Commissioner.
I'm a little bit simple in my background of where I come from. But my decision on whether or not we need a plan, the yardstick I apply, if tomorrow the federal government gave me $50 million to spend on transportation in Southeast Alaska, do I have priority 1, 2, and 3? And if they did that, we would get in a terrible argument about which road to build, which ferry to build, because we don't have a plan. And that's the purpose of those plans, and that's the test that I apply. And if my people can't answer that question, then we don't have a plan. So that sort of my philosophy on planning.
Yes, I just want to make a few announcements. Tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., Senate Finance Room 532 will be a joint meeting with the House and Senate Finance to overview the Alaska Railroad Corporation. And tonight at 4:30 in the Senate Finance, there will also be a preview of the Alaska Railroad Corporation Legislative Finance and Budget and Audit. Will make presentations at that time, and I sure appreciate you taking the time and coming forward.
I enjoyed it as usual, and thank you for inviting me.
Presenting the Transportation Committee, and I'm sure there will be a lot of other issues that we'll be discussing, but thank you all again, and this meeting is adjourned. 2:30. Thank you.
Good job.
We'll get you some good information on this.